Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back for another episode of the wildly entertaining and wildly misinformative podcast.
Monet, we're early birds today. It's 10:32 in New York. Where on earth are you?
I'm currently in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which the high this weekend was -3 degrees. And so I think I'm an hour behind you. So it is 9:32 here in Minneapolis. It's very cold and very early. And things I am not fond of.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I should hurry to say, well, I am so honored that you could be up with us. Not because of anything you've done, but because Kim Kardashian wants to buy your dress.
Oh my God, Kim Kardashian posted a picture. She just posted a picture of her. Well, not Kim Kardashian posted it. This picture's going around of Kim K, Oprah, and J-Lo taking a selfie together. Everyone was like, oh my God, what are these women doing together? What could they possibly be doing? It turns out they were at the 25-year anniversary party for Anastasia Beverly Hills, which is I think they still sponsor Drag Race, or they're one of the people. I didn't realize how big, I knew how big Anastasia was, but I mean, to have these Oprah and fucking Kim K are supporters of Anastasia Beverly Hills, that feels so cute.
So you already started with fake news by saying that Kim posted it, and then you said she didn't. Listen, I think I didn't know she was chummy with Oprah. Last week I said, I think Kim wants your SpongeBob dress because she used it as a couch cover. Now I understand. It's the only one that will fit Oprah.
Oh my God.
So what were you doing in Minneapolis? Because you were somewhere else the night before.
The night before I was in I did two shows. I did a show in Kansas City, a sold out show in Kansas City, a sold out show in Des Moines, and now I'm here in Minneapolis for the next 2.5 weeks because I'm doing the role of the Duchess of Krakenthorpe in La Fille du Regiment, which is an opera here at the Minnesota Opera.
Oh my God! Well, mm-hmm. So have you done like a regular singing engagement like this for years? You better watch that throat.
I know it's been years since I've had an engagement. I have not sang operatically since 2012. And I have definitely not done an engagement like this since I graduated, since like the year after I graduated college. So it's been a decade, and it's been really fun getting back into the swing of things. The cast here is fucking amazing. The Minnesota Opera is amazing, and it's going to be just a really, like, dope performance. Like, never has there ever been a drag queen that I know of or anyone here has been in an opera and having, like, a role. And this is opening up the conversation to do it in another way, in a bigger way, in like a, because the Duchess is a small role. You know, everyone else is in the opera the entire time. I'm only in Act Two, for three scenes. So, yeah, it's very exciting.
Well, I've never heard the opera referred to as dope, but here's to you turning opera into something for today's kids. I'm imagining that the Duchess is a comic role.
It is. It is.
Because I was about to say, it's going to be.
Have you seen any operas before, Bunny? Do you go to the opera?
No, I'm not that classy, but
yeah, we know.
I was in an opera when I was a teen, and they brought in opera stars from New York, like a famous tenor, to be the starring role, and he fell for me, and he was a chicken hawk because I wasn't nothing but 14, and was giving me like these big bottles of, like, back then the cologne for gays was Aramis.
Aramis.
Yes, it was a very, it's gone now, like no one cares, but back then, and he gave me, and my parents were like, we knew there was something wrong with our kid. We knew there was something wrong with this punk, but now these grown men from New York are writing love letters to it, and, you know, it was all very...
Wait, so the lead tenor in the show was sending you, like, bottles of Aramis?
Yes, and love letters and stuff like that. Cause
how old were you, for real?
I was about 14, and I was an extra. I was an extra in the opera.
And he was sending you that stuff? That is wild.
Well, I mean, what can I say?
Show us where he touched you.
Well, I mean, I was already having sex at 12. So.
I mean, same, but I don't think anyone I was also the people who I was having sex with at, well, the person was my age. It wasn't someone who was the lead role in a show. Wild.
Well, at one point I met a guy from The Wiz, and the guy from the opera, he didn't get in a booty. The guy from The Wiz did.
Michael Jackson? Well, that scams.
No, I wasn't that young. He wasn't younger than 14. Anyway, he got the booty. I've looked him up. I don't know whether he gave me a fake name. Back then, I still remember it, but I did try Googling him, and that was my that was me trying to get a little taste of the big city, quite a taste of the very big city. You know, when I was in Chattanooga, and I was thinking, oh, I got to get out of here. You know, I'm meant for bigger things. And so these stars from out of town, you know, wanting me, made me feel like, oh, okay, you don't have to stick here. You're accepted by others from elsewhere, and that meant a lot to me, even if it was pedophilia.
But you're wild.
I am wild. I had a wild weekend.
Oh, tell me about your weekend.
I went up to Poughkeepsie to perform my show, Pig in a Wig, which...
Your show canceled?
No, not yet.
Oh my God, Bunny, you should do a show about being canceled. It will be very funny.
Well, I think I should just call it Mentally Regarded, and it will get it will get canceled on its own.
Okay, so you went to Poughkeepsie.
I went to Poughkeepsie. You know, as of someone that's lived in New York for 35 years, I do not know upstate. You know, I mean...
No one cares.
No, they really do. I mean, people who've been in New York as long as I do, they often get, like, Justin Vivian Bond has a place up there. I mean, it's like an artist. It's like, so, look, people from New York, if they have money, they go to Provincetown if they want, you know, shows, and they go to Fire Island if they want dick, and circuit parties. And they go upstate if they want a little bit more relaxed, you know, just like the country life.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But it is beautiful. It's beautiful up there. But, you know, at any rate, I introduced myself as George Santos and told them I was going to perform some traditional Jewish dances that I had learned at Baruch College, where George Santos claimed he attended. And it was a really fun audience. Sold out. So that's good. And a really cute venue. Actually, a friend of Bianca's, who I knew from the New York scene, but I guess he's up there, his name Jimmy Prada. So it's called the Academy.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy Prada.
Yeah, it was the first big show that they'd had there. It's called the Academy in Poughkeepsie, and I absolutely love it. So thank you, Out Loud Festival. And
Was it Outfest that had this there?
It's called Out Loud Hudson Valley Festival. And
okay.
That they were a great crowd, that gay, straight, all of it, Mick, you know, young.
We love that.
Yeah. So I've always wanted to perform, you know, in places, you know, nearby New York, so I don't have to get on a plane. So it was fun. Of course,
You just took a train up there.
I took a train up there, and going up there was annoying because there were these like group of straight guys on the train who were very, very loud. I imagine they had come in together, you know, a couple nights before to go to a sporting event. And, you know, as soon as I got on the train, you know, with longish hair, obviously a queen, you know, with a mask on, they started saying shit like, look who voted for Biden. These guys were like alphas. They were like older alphas. You know, every time one of them stood up, you know, the other one would try to pull their pants down. These were like overgrown, you know, schoolyard bullies. And, you know, every joke they made to each other was a gay joke about themselves. But, you know, it was, I mean, it was fine. But, you know, that's the kind of, New York is a blue state, but largely because New York City is so blue.
Right.
Outside of New York City, it's more Republican.
Oh, yeah, girl. Especially you go out on Long Island and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Or Staten Island. That's the Republican stronghold in New York City. That's where the that's where the firefighters and the cops live.
yeah.
So
interesting. Not grown ass man. I can't. But like the thought of being a grown man and behaving like that is so annoying to me. I'm like, ew, stop.
Well,
like,
they also
grown ass man.
I know, but that when they get together, it's the herd instinct thing.
Right.
And quite honestly, we can't say that if a bunch of drag queens got on a train coming home from an event and they were drunk, we can't say for sure that they're not going to be voguing up and down the aisles or snapping their fingers or trying to read somebody else on the train like these guys read.
I mean, that is you do ring up a point, or like hitting on a cute guy that's just sitting there minding his business. I've seen that for sure.
I've done that.
So you're not wrong.
Yeah. Not wrong. I mean, I had an interesting encounter with at Duane Reade the other day, and I noticed.
Duane Reade.
Yes. And there was a gorgeous security guard who looked like he, you know, he was a big guy, young, Puerto Rican, just gorgeous, muscular, everything. I mean, I was literally ready to faint over this fool, but he wasn't paying any attention to me, and he looked very, like, unapproachable. So it turns out I knew the woman who was ringing me up, the cashier, and so I was buying a lot of vitamins because it's, you know, flu season and all that, COVID, whatever. So
yeah, vitamins.
I made a joke that said, where I said, you know, I can just get all that. She said, wow, you're getting a lot of vitamins. I said, yeah, now I don't have to exercise or eat right because I'm taking vitamins. That's how it works, right? So then the guy laughed and we struck up a little conversation. By the end of it, he was so sweet. Sometimes you have to put your own assumptions on hold. And and as a result of that, I mean, he still doesn't want to fuck me. But it was nice to strike up a conversation with someone who I thought looked very don't speak with me. And he ended up being very approachable.
You should have approached him like, oh, I see. I think I'm missing some vitamin D, sir. Oh, do you happen to have any?
That's a great idea. Oh, my God. I didn't think of that. Also, you know, he heard me asking the cashier, do you have any XXL magnums? And she said, is your dick that big? I said, no, but my asshole is. Okay.
And he'd be like, oh, sorry, I'm just an XL. I still won't fit.
Well, if it's just XL, no me gusta. Sorry, senor.
Ebony XL, honey. Is that what the XL in her name stands for? How big her penis is?
Well, she's a New York City drag queen who is a good performer. I don't know. I think maybe it was because I don't know. She used to work with us at XL. I don't really know why she called herself that.
She is from Haiti, so having XL behind her about her Johnson doesn't sound too crazy to me.
Yeah. There's a party called Berlin at Providence, and she performed as a balcony, and she would a lot of times climb over the balcony. So she would, like, you know, as like a stunt to like perform, like almost like she could fall. And she did a split on the outside of the balcony, overlooking the audience, and her balls and everything just like fell out. Which I don't think she knew, and just kept performing the entire time, like over the balcony, over people with their junk just out everywhere.
She's actually a proper dance teacher. She goes back to Haiti and teaches dance school.
Oh, really?
Ebony, yeah.
I go back to St. Lucia and I teach dance school.
But Ebony has students in her classes. You just do yours for tips.
I just do mine just for the tip. Well, I think, Bunny, we should jump into the headlines of the day, darling.
Let's do it. Headliners.
Kind of, we can't really, it isn't out yet, but a headline that we should be talking about is you're making your feature film debut. Well, no, it's not your debut. You've been in films before.
Yes. I have starred in Wigstock the movie and Wig the movie. Right. But this movie is called Playland, and it's about a club in Boston that existed for about 40 years. And Kim Kardashian doesn't want to buy my dress yet, but the designer has created
that's
some
of the vomit and the pee that's in it.
Well, the designer has made costumes for Beyonce.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe it will. Anyway, it's an arty film. We had the director Jordan West on. If anyone remembers, she was they were very ill with a cold and could barely speak, but she didn't cancel the interview. At any rate, it hits a film festival for its debut in Rotterdam, Netherlands, on February.
Where are you going?
I'm not. I'm going to be in Miami DJing at Wigwood, and Tammy Brown's performing with a bunch of other crazies from down there. So, but I'll be at the New York premiere, I hope. And it's not going to be like a major motion picture release. It's very much independent art film. And it's not like a rom-com or, you know, it's not even a comedy. And I don't play myself. I play a famous drag queen from, I don't play her, but this role references her. And she was a part of this club in Boston. The film, they're listing me as the star of the film. I don't think I have the most screen time. I'm probably just the oldest. It has Danielle from Pose is in it.
Brooks.
Yeah, and I think the lead is actually a trans bodybuilder who I don't have the stuff in front of me right now. But at any rate, it was a very fun thing to do. And I think the star of it is going to be the style of it and the look of the movie, because it is not a huge budget, but it looked beautiful. Everything. They really slaved over the set, the lighting and the set. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm playing a much older, heavier drag queen than I am. So you know how that, I had to put on so much weight for the role.
I remember when you were filming this in the summer. You filmed this in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really fun, and I'm glad it's coming out. So
do you want to invite me to the premiere, or are you just going to not invite me?
The latter. I don't know when it is, but I will invite you. I guess there will be a, I don't know if there'll be a New York, maybe there'll be just be a Boston one. I don't know. But it'll start hitting festivals, and I don't know if it will receive a theatrical release, but I don't know if it will be a wide in every city release because it's an art film. Yeah,
maybe like a selected theaters.
Right. So next year at the Oscars, honey, you might be talking about Big Bad Bun.
Let me tell you something. If they are, if this film wins an Oscar, people who should not get on the mic and talk, you. Everybody will start tearing down the system. Oh, you rich celebrity faggots here. You know what? Fuck you.
Well, until I refuse. Who knows?
It would definitely be timed out with music and cut to commercial. Definitely.
Oh, for sure.
100%.
Oh, my God. You're already trying to spoil my big moment, and it hasn't even happened. Well, let's. I'll wait for the nomination first.
I think that opera singer spoiled your big moment.
Yes. Yes.
Well, moving right along, bitch. I saw this story, and as soon as I saw it, I immediately thought of you because I was like, "This is wild." But it's been very interesting. So the Aretha Franklin, what's the name of the publication?
Oh, the New York Post and the Daily Mail.
Yeah.
Came out with a story last week that has gotten quite a lot of attention. I saw that T.S. Madison did a segment on it.
Mm-hmm.
And but it also got a bunch of attention because the New York Post and the Daily Mail are conservative papers, and mm-hmm. they ran with this story saying that a group of trans activists had said that Aretha Franklin's song, Natural Woman, is offensive to trans people.
Yeah, it was tweeted. It was not tweeted. It was a post by @TransMindful. And it's the TCMA, Trans Cultural Mindfulness Alliance. But apparently, this is not a real trans Instagram. This is like, or Twitter. This is like some fake account that they make posts like this to cause to be licentious, to be shady. And this is what their tweet said: Aretha Franklin's 1968 song "Natural Woman" perpetuates multiple harmful anti-trans stereotypes. There's no such thing as a quote-unquote natural woman. This song has helped inspire acts of harm against transgender women. The TCMA, this account, is requesting it is removed from Spotify and Apple Music.
Right. So. Now, the Post, I don't know about the other conservative outlets who ran with this. At least they did put out a follow-up article that says, update, after initially claiming they were not a parody account, the Transcultural Mindfulness Alliance now insists they're just a satire group and were merely joking about, quote, harmful anti-trans stereotypes. So, in other words, this did not bother some.
Also, this is their first post ever.
Yeah. Okay. So this is and apparently the group changed their Twitter account to say that it was a parody account. And there are many parody accounts on Twitter. Some of them are quite hilarious. But anyway, no trans people were asking for this to be taken down. I don't know about the Daily Mail and the other things. But you know what? This is why the conservative media wants to run with this. Because it makes trans people look bad. It makes them look pissy. It makes them look crazy. And, however... Why were they able to play on this? Because some trans women say, I identify as a woman and I present as a woman, but I will always be a trans woman rather than a biological woman. Mm-hmm. Some trans women don't make that distinction. They say, no, I was, even when I was a man, I was a woman. Even when even before I transitioned, I was a woman. Not all trans people think alike. I have trans people who tell me, no, I'm not a cisgendered woman. I'm a trans woman. I'll never be a cis. So, and then I have another trans friend who I absolutely adore who told me, that younger trans friends of hers were saying, because she was in the music industry and no one ever knew her T, that no one knew that she was trans, that she should come out and tell her story. And she looked at me and said, "Bunny, I'm a woman." In London on the high street, I will never forget this, and she's gorgeous. "Bunny, I'm a woman. Why would I ever qualify what I am by calling myself a trans woman?" I was like, "I love you." Because not everybody feels the same. Not everybody wants to be an activist. Some people want to get married and have a picket fence. But you see, the reason that... So, when you are making demands that like in New York, if you... there was a law passed a few years ago that if you identify as whatever, a man, a woman, trans, they, them, or even lesser known ones like Z-E, mm-hmm. or Zier.
X-E.
Oh, okay. There's also a Zier, Z-I-R, which I had never heard before.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
Yeah, I mean, and you can, if your boss keeps on refusing to call you by the right pronoun, then you can sue him for some amount, $10,000, $25,000, etc. Now, mm-hmm. I think you and I both know, Monet, that this law is meant to protect people who were one sex and transition to another sex while at the same job. So if you if you've worked at a company for 9 years and you transition 8 years ago, and your boss is still calling you Conrad when your name is now Connie?
Yeah.
Or stuff like that, then yeah, that could, and you can prove that it's discrimination. Well, then yes, that is workplace discrimination. If somebody does it and you just think it's an honest mistake because you get along with that person, then you might move on and not be entitled, or you can't prove they did it maliciously. That's my understanding of the law. T.S. Madison did make me laugh and said, "You know what trans people are having a problem with this?
White ones." Right. So I mean, I wish we could. I mean, I want to pull some of the T.S. Madison thing, but it's so long, and you know, Instagram, you can't like filter through it, because T.S. Madison, I thought you made some really valuable points that I want to bring up here, but you can't play these fucking videos on Instagram because they just play the whole thing. Anyway, but yeah, I agree. She's like, you know who really cared about this? The white girls.
Right, but that's funny. She goes on. I didn't see the end of the video to say that. No trans people were offended by this, because it was a fake group. But so what does that do for the New York Post and conservatives? It makes them think that trans people are making ridiculous demands. The right wing wants everyone to think.
T.S. Madison makes the same point too. This is what she goes on to say in her video.
Right, they want to say that, you know, drag queen story hours, even though drag queens are not trans, you know, are or not all of them are, you know, want to. They want to denigrate that too. They want to denigrate trans swimmers competing against female swimmers, which is a gray area that not all left or right feel the same way about. So it's, you know, and you know, you have to really be hip to what they're trying to do, you know, when you read the media, and not just take it as face value, because they ran with this story because they wanted this to be true. They wanted to, like the Post initial article said that, Aretha's song from 1967 was actually meant as a female empowerment thing. And so they want to stir up controversy between trans women and women. And now, please don't jump down my throat, because I've said that there's a difference, because I'm not going there. But, you know, I was looking at this and thinking, there's no way in hell that trans women are upset by a song from 1967, you know, that says, "You make me feel like a natural woman." I've seen trans performers lip sync to that song and feel their titties.
And make money. Yes, and make money.
Right. So Sugar Pie Coco would pull out her actual, not silicone, but her fat man's boob. She wasn't trans. And the place would go absolutely nuts. So, you know, Aretha Franklin is so, you know, it just makes trans people seem silly if they were digging up 1967 songs that are so beloved by Aretha Franklin, who, you know, of course, T.S. Madison is right. Few black people are going to take issue with something that Aretha Franklin did because she is so beloved by so many generations. Sure. I mean, she's the epitome of the, you know, American black woman who can sing her ass off.
I was watching Aretha Franklin's interview with Wendy Williams, and Aretha Franklin was just so cunty, and she was so, like, no nonsense. That shit was just so funny, the way Wendy would ask the questions and the way she would respond about, like, different artists and stuff. I'm like, it's just, I mean, the epitome of no filter. Just a fucking straight shooter. I live.
Yeah, I do too. She would, they would say, you know, what do you think of Taylor Swift? And she would say,
gowns.
Nice outfits. Yeah, something like that. But so I want to, I want to just bring up something. I won't bother Googling it, but so while the conservative media wants to portray trans activist demands as crazy, why can they do that so easily and have people believe it? Well, because some things are ridiculous. There was a trans group in Scotland a few years ago that wanted to ban drag queens from a parade because it might, quote, confuse trans people. And I'm like, wait. Drag queens are part of the community. Not everyone's always understood them, not even the gay community at large. Not everyone in the gay community has understand trans people. Surely,
also some trans people are drag queens.
Right, but surely we've got to be supportive of different types of people in the community and not say we're banning drag queens because it might confuse some younger trans people. And going back, also a couple of years, there was a college bus trip, and I guess these people were you know, PC.
When you were in college?
So no, PC? Not that far back. But they had an issue with Lou Reed's famous rock song, Take a Walk on the Wild Side. Now, the first lines of the song are, Holly moved to MIA, shaved her legs, and she became a he. She said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. Now, they thought that this was transphobic because it talked about a trans person's transition. In fact, Holly refers to Holly Woodlawn, who, before she died a few years ago, was a Warhol superstar, a pioneering trans woman who was getting, press, you know, before, I mean, for a while it was only Christine Jorgensen, who was like the first famous sex change, who was like
an
art.
I don't know who the hell.
Yeah, she was.
Christine Jorgensen.
Yeah, she was in the 50s, and she was one of the first well-known people to have a sex.
Oh, the one who was married to that. So she was married to that guy in the army, and she lived a lot of her life in Paris.
I don't know if it was Paris, but she wasn't. She was in the army.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I don't know if she now we had Tish Gervais on, who did go over to Germany and live with her husband, totally unspookable. No one knew, including the other.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
And there was also Calpurnia Adams, who is a Tennessee girl like me, now lives in L.A. She's a performer who also lived with her husband on an army base, and there's a movie about it, documentary about it. But so the thing
that's
is,
so fierce.
I knew
honestly,
Holly.
Goals. I wish I could do that.
Well,
anyway, go ahead.
I knew Holly. Mm-hmm. She was, you know, lived in New York. She passed away after she'd lived in L.A. for a few years, but very friendly person. She used Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side as her opening number. That's how thrilled she was. She thought this was one of her, you know, besides Andy Warhol and being in those movies back then, that this was one of her claims to fame. So are you, were those students who were concerned about the lyrics of Lou Reed's song really representing, I mean, they didn't want this song, they thought this song was transphobic, but yet the trans person it was written about loves it and uses it in her act as an opening.
Yeah, and oftentimes you do see like the young, like the younger members of the community kind of looking back and finding the quote unquote problems that they may see in things like this song and in things, and may, again, Natural Woman is not true what I'm saying. Like, they go back to those songs and be like, well, here's why it is problematic. And they try to like bring these issues back. And I, to your point, if the person that it was written about is okay with it, then I think we had to like take a beat and be like, you know what? This is not my fight to have. And, or we cannot take this, those experiences and try to like ban a whole segment of the community because we deem it not to be okay.
Yes, and I mean, as always, I would love to stress, we're talking about trans people getting murdered, misgendered by the police, discriminated against, not being able to afford the gender-affirming surgeries that they need. Do you think that they're running around worrying about a song from decades ago and its lyrics just because so when college students make, you know, outlandish claims like this, that seeds the soil for conservative news outlets like the New York Post and the Daily Mail in the UK to mock to run with something like the Natural Woman is, you know, offending trans people when they didn't check their source.
There's also with Calpurnia. So in 1999, she was dating Barry Winchell, who was a soldier in the army, and he ended up being murdered by another fellow soldier when they found out that Barry was dating a trans woman.
Right.
So that's like another like little, you know, layer to the whole, you know, the army and the, you know, people being up in arms over trans people.
Right. Yeah, I mean, listen, I expect younger people to have a different viewpoint. Why wouldn't they? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
sure.
I mean, you know, they know what they know. They don't know what they don't know. They've got a whole life to live. And, you know, I just have an issue with the way that they'll come down on people. And of course, when we're online, we don't know each other. Your profile picture might be a cat. And, you know, we've never met each other. So we can read something. If we're in a bad mood or had too much coffee, we can have a fit of stress or whatever. But let me give you another example. Mm-hmm. About 5 years ago, 4 years ago, Amanda Lepore, the celebrated nightclub personality, muse for Dave LaChapelle, the photographer, you know, very famous in New York. Every person in New York City nightlife, you know, they've got it. You made it if you have a selfie with Amanda. And she's happy to oblige and just is well-loved, you know, since the days of Michael Ehrlich. That's how far we go back. Now, I know Amanda well. She's appeared at Wigstock. We've worked in the same nights together. When her book came out a few years ago, I tweeted about it to support my friend. And I said that she is the most famous transsexual in the world. And check out her new book and put a link to the book in the artwork or whatever. Tagged her, whatnot. Two people came at me saying that word transsexual is no longer allowed. Well, I know that it's not supposed to be allowed by some people who are woke, but that is how Amanda Lepore has billed herself for 15 or 20 years. So in your attempt to censor me, do you think that you should be censoring the words of trans women and their own bios? That's what she called herself. The most fit. She said, my lips are from Africa. My pussy is from Mexico. My cheekbones are from Asia. You know, I mean, she referred to herself as the most famous transsexual in the world for decades.
Wait, transsexual is not...
You're supposed to say transgender because it's been deemed by the powers that be that transsexual is no longer acceptable.
I don't think I knew that.
Well, one person who tweeted at me, you know, they actually understood after we had a few tweets and they realized I'm trying to plug a trans person's book who's actually someone in my life that I've written music with. Okay.
Right.
And the other one sounded almost like they would have hit me if we were in person.
To be fair, I would hit you if we were in person as well.
But you wouldn't need a reason.
Right, 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 right.
So anyway, the reason that I like this story, don't believe everything that you read. Of course the right wing is going to try to tie... everything bad about trans and gays, you know, just like they do with Drag Queen Story Hours, claiming that we're groomers, and they're just trying to tie it up in a negative thing to reflect on, you know, the gay community at large, our rights at large, and we've been approaching Nina West, who kind of became the face of Drag Queen Story Hour, you know, because she likes doing Drag Queen Story Hours, to come on in an upcoming episode to discuss this whole thing, because I think that the claims of the right wing are trying to discredit all gay people, because... Listen, I don't think Nina's a groomer. I don't think anybody that's doing Drag Queen Story Hours is a groomer. I don't believe
besides
that.
Besides Lady Bunny.
Well, you know, I like old men.
That opera guy, maybe.
Which, Monet Exchange?
No, the one who was sending opera you... The one who was sending you...
That was sending you dick pics via fucking Telegram.
Oh, okay. Well, honey, I'm glad you said Telegram, because this was when I was a twink. I wasn't even a twink, honey. I was a wink. They didn't have no cell phones for about 30 more years.
Right.
But yeah, I would love to have that discussion, because I don't know. This is really, really out of hand, and there's some interesting arguments about it. So maybe that for an upcoming episode.
Yeah, maybe we can have... I mean, maybe we can get Maddie on there. We're both friends of Maddie. We can see if Maddie's available, or someone else of the trans experience who can come in and give us their point of view.
Oh, you mean T.S. Madison?
Yeah.
Well, something tells me that she hasn't done too many Drag Queen Story Hours, and that's one reason...
Oh, Drag Queen Story Hour. I thought you mean about the whole... I thought you were going back to the whole conversation we were having before we introduced that.
Yeah, I love T.S. Madison, because she is unfiltered, and she will give you the real deal.
Yeah.
Unless she's talking about Beyonce in Dubai.
Oh, my God.
And no, every one of her posts is like the six posts are now about Beyonce over the weekend. And obviously, I spend too much time online.
Yeah, you do. You need to go back to Hawaii and go swim with some dolphins, Lady Bunny.
Well, I'm going down to DJ at Wigwood this Sunday, and I'm going to have 5 days off in the sand. In the sun and the sand in Miami.
Miami, right. You know, I was thinking about going to Key West for my birthday. I've never been to Key West. Everyone talks about how fierce Key West is, but I've never visited, and I always hear it's magical, it's tropical, it's so warm, it's so cute.
Well, I mean, you live in L.A. Do you really need to go to the warmth, maybe to warm up after Minneapolis?
Yeah, definitely after Minneapolis. Also, L.A. is cold in the winter. It's like low 50s. That's cold for L.A. Like, that's cold. So I would like to go somewhere hot, like hot, hot, hot.
Well, Key West is kind of like Florida's New Orleans.
Florida's New Orleans, like in terms of what?
In terms of a drinking destination.
Oh, so it's that vibe, that like party drinky vibe.
It's a very party hardy, you know. I'm sure that alcohol. I mean, in New Orleans, they never stop serving alcohol.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's
I've never been to New Orleans either. I mean, I was there twice for two tours, but it's one of those things. We got there at like 11 o'clock in the morning. The show was at 7, and the bus pulled out at like 1 a.m., so it wasn't like a full day both times.
Well, don't go to New Orleans if you're dieting, because that is the best food in the country.
Is it?
Child, you don't even want to. Oh. Please go to the brunch at the Seven Sisters. You will never believe it. Never, ever believe it. I love New Orleans. Love everything about New Orleans except Bianca Del Rio.
Well, I went to go to that to try that restaurant you talked about, the one in Terminal B at Atlanta Hartsfield Jackson.
Pascal's.
Yeah, the one at Terminal B, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I went to go there, but the line was very long, and I didn't have time.
You think I'm going to tell you about a restaurant that doesn't have a long line? Do I have a long gut to prove that I eat there?
So next time I fly to Atlanta, I'm going to try again to go to Pascal's and see what all the rage is.
Honey, you will slap your mama for that food.
Wow, buddy, my mom is dead.
Oh, well, you'll dig her up and slap her.
Do you know who needs to be dug out right now, honey? Is these past fucking presidents and vice presidents who have all the classified documents, honey, swirling around, honey. The documents are being unclassified. They're declassified. They're in a garage. They're in the basement. They're in the attic. They're in the room, girl.
They're in my vagina, and I don't even have one yet.
So in case you have been living under a rock and you have not seen the news or opened social media, a barrage. Well, we all know about Donald Trump and his Florida estate at Mar-a-Lago, and him hiding over 300 classified documents in his home and not cooperating with law enforcement, not cooperating with anyone, lying about it, flushing them down the toilet. We've all heard of that. Well, recently, in the past couple weeks, President Joe Biden has been here. We have found classified documents in his home. They're thinking somewhere between 10 and 15. And now, as of late last week, ex-Vice President Michael Pence, we have found classified documents in his place as well. So it's like, what is going on, Mary?
I know. I think with Pence, they just found one, but this is a real game of duck goose. Get it? That was a play on duck goose, which is goose. A children's game they played in the 1930s. I enjoyed that game. But
is that really when it's from the 1930s?
I make that joke because I don't think kids today play it. They're playing video games, not duck goose.
Well, but, you know, we all think you were born somewhere around the 1930s, so.
Yes, well, at any rate, I the news is making this a huge story. And, you know, I speak for myself and possibly most of us. You have to follow the law really, really carefully to know the difference between top secret and classified documents. You have to know, you know, because the Department of Justice is doing a probe into these, but also Congress is doing a probe of Trump and of Biden. Maybe now they'll do a probe of Pence as well. Who knows? This is not the biggest issue, even though the press is making it a big issue, because what the fear is that these people, that one side can make the other side look bad by showing that they were careless with state secrets. So, you know, when Trump's, there are differences between Trump's documents and Biden's documents. Trump had many more documents. The FBI raided his home. So he was not cooperating. You know, as Biden says, he did cooperate. So when Trump's home was raided, you know, Joe Biden said, you know, you should not, this is shows how unqualified he is. I don't remember Joe's exact words, but whether Trump had more documents or whether he cooperated, those are distinguishing factors. But the same thing is true. You're not supposed to take classified documents. So we can talk about how Trump had them in a safe. We can talk about how Biden had them in a garage. You know, there's all kinds of things, and most people are never going to know the legalities of this. Don't you agree, Monet?
Yeah, no one. Yeah, we'll never know.
But now they're all saying, now that Biden's been found with the documents, oh, we don't, they're classifying everything. They're classifying grocery lists. So, you know.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen people saying that.
There were Pence had about a dozen that we know of.
Yeah. Oh, he had a dozen.
Mike Pence had a dozen. Well, yeah. You know, and the people also saying, well, you know, the reason that Mike Pence might have that many is because, you know, he was getting out of there when they were trying to hang him on January 6th. So a staffer may have, like, just put them with his things. I'm like, no, I don't buy that.
So there are things that, like, the press doesn't talk about. So top secret information, they're given designations. So you have two different kinds of top secret information, really. You have SCI, which is where SCIF comes from. So Sensitive Compartmentalized Information Facility, where you can view these things. And then you have code word protected information. So the reason why the National Archives knew that Trump had documents and was requesting them for a long time is because he had code word protected information. The code word protected information is the things that you have to sign for, the things that they're that they show you whoever had them in their hand. The SCI documents, they're not logged and registered the way code word protected information is. So that's why the documents that Pence and Biden had, no one knew they had them because those documents are not logged, because they're not at the level of code word protected information. So they're different types. So yes, all three of them were wrong that they should not have had those documents. But there's a difference in the type of documents that they had.
Right.
And there's a difference in how they were handled by Pence and Biden are in one category. Trump is in another category. Because Trump had his documents, people were in and out of the room, and they had them there. They were in his desk. They were commingled with his personal stuff. Whereas Pence's and Biden's were in sealed packages, which how they come. And they were both, the National Archives were notified by Biden and Pence. No one came to Biden and Pence asking.
Right. I just don't.
The situation is very, very, very different.
I just don't think we can automatically think the worst about Trump. And then when Biden does something similar.
But we can, because Trump has a history of why we might think that.
He obstructed for 2 years. He wouldn't give the documents back.
So are you saying that Biden doesn't have a history of doing things that are dishonest?
I'm not saying dishonest. I'm saying Trump has a history of deleterious behavior.
I think Biden does too, not on the level that Trump does. You know, I don't think Biden is an honest player. And, you know,
I mean, it's politics. None of these people are 100% honest or forthcoming. I mean, it's politics. It is the name of the game. It is a system that has been set up that we all have to play with.
Right.
Like, that is what politics is.
Right. But I don't think we can say that, oh, because we bought the idea that Joe Biden is a return to decency and less chaos after Trump, that Trump is guilty with his classified documents and Biden is not. If there's an offense, you know, my concern about classified documents is whether state secrets were shared from the documents. But if one side wants to say you need to suffer criminal consequences and the other side doesn't even need to be investigated.
Bunny, if one person asks, if someone asks you for documents and you refuse to give them, and someone asks Monet, and Monet offers her documents without being asked, you're saying those are the same things and they're not.
Okay, I said there were differences in the number. Trump had more documents.
Not the number. One is obstruction. No, but,
I said that there were differences in the way that Biden was cooperating. But here is from The Hill, the truth about Biden's document debacle. He didn't self-report. To self-report a crime, a person needs to report it to law enforcement authorities. Biden and his aides absolutely did not do that.
Because there was no crime.
It is a crime to take classified documents out of their spot and leave them. You know, this is where I say we get it into the laws. Because Biden had some of his in a garage at a place where, you know, Hunter Biden was you know, known to frequent.
Well, listen, I mean, the long and short of it is that this story is going to keep on developing. I'm sure we'll be talking about these fucking documents from now until probably the next election cycle.
Yes.
And there is going to be more investigation. I'm sure more truth will come to light. Exactly what is the contents of these documents? If they're not state secrets, I'm sure we'll find out what they are. Bitch, they may have been plans for Biden to put a fucking Peloton in the Oval Office. Who fucking knows?
Of course, you know, Republicans will use anything that's happening under Biden to... not progressives. Marjorie Taylor Greene will use anything that's happening under Biden to attack her, whether she really cares about that or whether she has a... but every party does that. So that's like saying that you're spouting Democratic talking points. You know, I mean, there's...
It's not a Democratic talking point to say that the reason why eggs are so expensive has to do with the avian flu. It's not a Democratic talking point when Monet and I, who are both drive, are telling you that gas prices are not surging.
Okay, well, let me tell you.
That's factual. That's just information.
Let me
You're
tell you.
Twisting it to being a Democratic talking point.
You are
okay,
so.
Well, listen. We cannot. We have to. I think our listeners are not trying to hear us scream about eggs and gas for the next.
Well, you might be surprised. And here's the progressive take. People aren't doing well. People are having a hard time. Our housing is unaffordable. And all of this just takes another pinch in their wallet. It is something. Some people only vote about gas prices because they're not engaged with politics, because it hits people.
And that's silly. If you are a grown ass fucking adult in this country and the only thing you're voting on is gas, that's silly.
But it's not silly if you drive an Uber and you can't afford to do that anymore.
I get it, but there are other as a grown human being, adult, and if gas is the only thing that you're voting on, I think that is silly.
Well, I know, but we can't.
So there are issues that I think that are important to me. I would like to only vote about racial stuff. I would like to only vote about queer things. I would like to only vote about, but I'm not. I have to look at the whole picture.
Oh, I agree. I think people should look at the whole. I don't understand one issue voters, but I just think that there is a malaise that is created when people are having trouble affording gas, eggs, healthcare, you know, housing. And, you know, the progressive thing to say would be people have done so badly in the something of a recession caused by COVID and, you know, other factors, that they wanted to see what Kamala Harris promised, a payment of $2,000 per month to help people as they re-enter the economy. That's what the progressive thing is. Help people who need help. That's all it is. Whether it's with gas, whether it's with healthcare, whether it's with student debt, help them if they need help. That's where I'm coming from.
And I think we can all get behind helping people who need help. I mean, I think that is not a crazy notion. That is not something that probably everyone listening to this podcast does not want. But do you know which party is not about helping people? Because they actively are making policy that is anti-helping people. They're a fucking Republican Party. Of the two parties that we have that exist, the one that is remotely, and maybe to you, Bunny, on the smallest scale, that want to help people, is the Democratic Party. The Republican Party has no intention whatsoever in anything that they do.
Well, they would be interested in helping gun owners, and they would be interested in helping, you know, rich people who want to pay less taxes. I mean, it just depends on how you look at it. I don't want guns, and I want rich people to pay more. I want them to pay what they paid a few decades ago.
Right, but while the Republicans now and are literally trying to pass bills to cut Social Security, and you like literally railed against that for years. You haven't mentioned that once. Nothing. Zero. You haven't commented any of that.
That's because both parties want to cut Social Security.
No, you're wrong. But you're wrong, buddy. You're wrong.
No, I'm not.
You are wrong.
No, I'm not.
The GOP they have bills coming to the table to cut Social Security.
Oh,
the
I know they do. Not. Yeah, but they tried. Obama tried to cut Social Security with chain CPI cuts.
Buddy, we're talking now. Let's not go back in time. Now.
Why not?
Today.
Why
today.
Not?
The power.
Well, we can't talk today. About Republicans. We can't talk about what. Of course, what's going on now is going to be, you know. I mean, they just won the House. I mean, they're going to be able to put any kind of bill that they want. Maybe Democrats should have done more in the 2 years when they had the majority, and then they wouldn't need to be worried about that because they would have gotten reelected with flying colors in the midterms. But they didn't do the $15 minimum wage, the voting rights, the immigration reform, the George Floyd policing act. They didn't do that.
Right, because. Because Republicans held them up.
No, because there was, because yes, Joe did. Manchin, Joe Manchin, and no. Kyrsten Sinema, who are Democrats, held them up.
No, no.
Yes, as yes. That, they had majorities, and Democrat turncoats, who were conservative, sided with the Republicans.
Listen, we are holding up our listeners right now. We are 2 hours into this podcast.
Okay.
I think that we can put a pin in this, and we can discuss next week.
Okay.
So, oh. Lady Bunny.
Oh yes, wait. I'm going to San Francisco.
I'm going to edit out all Bunny's talking points.
You always do. You always do. I will be performing The Greatest Ho on Earth at San Francisco's adorable Oasis. If you are a member of the Deep State, you get a discount. And a meet and greet with me and Putin.
And your deep pussy.
And I'm performing with the Minnesota Opera February 4th through the 12th. If y'all want to come see me sing some opera in a really fabulous look, it's going to be fucking life-changing. It is a moment. It's a historical moment in opera here in America. So come check it out. October 4th through the 12th in Minnesota. And Lady Bunny, I shall see you.
Yes. Take care.
A podcast network.